Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mean Green Nation Podcast, and we are here. It's July. It's hot. I can't really breathe because of the heat. No, I can breathe. Conference USA Media Days were last week, and I think we were there during a heat wave. I wasn't really paying attention, but it felt like a heat wave because I wore a backpack for like 300 feet. I don't know how far that walk is. Honestly, I'm terrible at distance. But I walked it, and then my back was all sweaty. Just for that little bit as I was walking to the Sports Performance Center there. Ladies and gentlemen, as usual, Mr. Aldo Vina's here, and he was there also.
It was hot that day, yeah.
Yeah, can you confirm Sweaty Adam?
Sweaty Adam, sweaty me, sweaty everybody.
Yeah, I think the person that looked the most comfortable was maybe Seth Luttrell. He's looking like a head coach now, you know, like an FBS head coach. You noticed that?
Yeah, his head was held up high. He had
he's feeling good.
Shoulders were strong.
I saw a picture today of him from, I guess they had a coach's convention down here in San Antonio. I don't know exactly what it was, but I remember his first year, people were giving him a hard time. They're like, well, he needs to be at these things, make a name for himself, blah, blah, blah. And then here he is, year three, there was him talking, showing clips from his North Carolina days. And then, you know, he's in the picture. He has the sockless loafer look, you know. He's smiling over there, looking comfortable.
He's looking sharp.
Yeah, the dude, I can't think of his name. The Dykes guy, I can't think of his name right now.
Sonny.
Yeah, Sonny. I want to say Spike, which is dead. he was looking kind of uncomfortable. He's like kind of scrunched up. He had a little.
Well, he was squeezed between two huge dudes, Blomgren and Luttrell.
Yeah, Blomgren. He's a nice guy. He kind of looks like like a kid's doll, like a kid. You know what I mean? Like he just looks like his eyes are sparkling when he talks to you. He kind of has a squidgy face. It makes him look younger, I think. But he is big. He's a big dude, but he has kind of a squidgy face. And then you can see just the whole crew there. You got Texas A&M, just three or four seats down from the Texas guy, but he's right next to Major Applewhite, University of Houston. Some big names there in that little club, but you know, Seth Luttrell's looking comfortable. He's like, yeah, I might have one of y'all's gigs as soon as y'all get fired one of these days. all right. So this episode of the podcast, we are just basically going to remember some things and play a few clips of audio. I know it's not super fun just to listen to a whole lot of clips, so we're going to kind of put them into context, play little clips of some of these interviews. Some of them are just kind of rambly. But like to set the stage, Conference USA Media Days were in a different place than they were last year. That's an improvement. And most people don't care. You know, most people don't go to these things. It's a lot of reporters and media-type people. But it was a nicer setup than it was last year in Irving in a hotel. Because then, when it's kind of drab, no matter what hotel lobby you're in, you're there and you're kind of talking, and then like somebody gets pulled off for a media obligation. You know, if you're a CBS Sports Network or your Facebook or somebody and you pay lots of money to broadcast these things, you want to get first dibs, and they want to have their behind the scenes, you know, coach speak talk, or anything, you know, working hard every day. Exactly. So they pull them off to go do those things or do silly bits. And, you know, in the meantime, they're supposed to be at these little tables where you as a writer get to just, you know, interview them. Tell me about the season. What's going to be good? This year, because it was at the performance, what is the official name?
Baylor Scott and White. Action Performance Running Hall Center.
Yeah, that place. It's not the Star, the Ford Center at Star Complex. God, it's too many branding names, man. It's like a different language. You got to be able to speak that.
We're proud to be at the Baylor Scott and White Sports Performance Center at the Star at Frisco of Jerry Jones. How would be that name?
Comma, Texas.
Yeah. So it was there, and they have like a field there, and they were very adamant that you couldn't mess up the field. They're like, no wheels on this field, guys. And it was football-y, right? There's a lot of football stuff. You see people working out upstairs, right? Getting massages or whatever. Getting their sports performance on. And I think that was a better place. And I think definitely the conference people like that. I talked to Judy, the commissioner, and she's like, yeah, this is great. It's a great place. We like it. It's centrally located. Everybody gets to have a good time. Frisco's a good place for this kind of thing. What were your impressions of it?
I thought it was pretty slick. I didn't go to the one last year, but it was very, I mean, it was slick, but very laid back, kind of relaxed. I was a little anxious going into it, but as soon as I walked in, all the coaches were relaxed, all the players were relaxed, so I was able to relax as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't say last year I was, like, nervous, but I didn't know what to expect, and so it was kind of like I was thinking through a lot of things. Like, I was, last year, I hadn't been to one of these. And my only experience with, like, media days is, like, Super Bowl media days, which is, like, silly and goofy. And, you know, like, the SEC media days, you see them, and it's a little bit more formalized. I had no idea what to expect. When they kind of laid it out, and you go out there, and you just see everybody just kind of chilling, you're like, oh, this is just chill mode, right? This one is a little bit more slick, like you said, but it had that same vibe, and I think a lot of that is because Conference USA is not overly covered. However, Lane Kiffin. He brings out the big guns, right? He brings out ESPN, and ESPN has a broadcast deal now, so they had a couple people there. I think it was like Trotter, his name was, ESPN reporter. And, you know, Brett McMurphy, who was like freelancing, he was covering Big 12 media days. He's out there, you know, talking to people. So it's not without its import, but it is really laid back. It's really cool. The format's a little weird, and so the way we had to get some of these interviews was like, hey, is that guy free? Is he in between obligations? Let's ambush him. And we'd, you know, kind of sprint over there and then, you know, like, hey, can we grab you for a couple minutes? And then I wouldn't say more often than not, but I'll say about 30% of the time a staffer would be like, all right, we got to pull him away so they can do the TV thing. And so we were like, okay, we'll get you when you come back.
Yeah, that was the hard part, is that anytime you wanted an interview, they were getting pulled over to a different interview with, like you said, CBS or whoever was there. Those were all going at the same time for all the players at the same time. So sometimes we were just standing there twiddling our thumbs, and then other times everybody was available.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. And so in that time when everybody's available, you're like, okay, who do we get? We kind of, you know, obviously we want the North Texas guys. We aimed for them first, but Mason Fine is a super popular guy, and he's a great quote, and everybody, there's that picture that's going around on Twitter of like 10 people surrounding him with like microphones or recording devices in his face. He was an easy quote. He's easy to talk to.
Yeah. This is Mason, the coach speak Fine.
Yeah. Like nobody was talking to Stock still. Is it Brett? Brent.
Yeah.
Brent. I before this, I made a joke that I just call him Kid Stockstill because I don't want to remember if there's an N in his name or not. But he was, like, super polite. You know, everybody there, for the most part, was easy to talk to. Obviously, they picked a couple of their best people, right? They're like, this guy could talk. You're going to want to know about him so he can go out there. Except for Southern Miss, they had a couple of guys that were just not the easiest to talk to.
Yeah, not very quotable. Just, I mean, they were nice guys. They were just not giving you a lot of info. Just yes, sir, no, sir.
Yeah, it was like pretty vanilla.
That I can remember, I think there were just three quarterbacks, Erdley, Fine, and Stockstill.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know what the game is, but I think a couple of coaches worked that into their talking points. Like, you don't see a whole lot of guys bringing, you know, receiver or whatever. Or then the other guy, well, you don't see a whole lot of guys bringing offensive linemen and a defensive lineman. Like, honestly, I mean, cool, I guess, you know. I don't care. It's fine. I mean, you know, North Texas last year brought running back and a defensive back, and this year they brought the quarterback and linebacker. You know. And was it last year UTSA brought their linebacker and a receiver, and this year they brought a running back and a defensive lineman, right? It just, you know, you just kind of pick whoever is a senior, a junior, senior, somebody, an upperclassman, or somebody you think you can give a good quote and it's not going to embarrass the university, right? Or you bring the guy that you think everybody's going to want to talk to. In that case, Florida Atlantic was, you know, Devin Singletary. So I guess let's start with sort of the namesake of this podcast, right? The one everybody cares about. North Texas, right? That's why we went there.
I was like, who?
Right, yes, Western Kentucky. Let's get into it. Okay, so like as we mentioned, Seth Luttrell is super polished now. In case you're wondering if he's the same kind of seemingly withdrawn guy, and you're like, this guy's going to be an awful quote. He's a lot more at ease doing these interview type things. I can see it just talking to him last year. Last year he was kind of hunched over, leaning forward, and just kind of had a serious look. He felt like he didn't want to do any of it. This year he was like, I'm going to go. It's going to be super chill. I'm going to shake hands. It's going to be fine. He's so practiced at it now in his third year that, you know, he can say a bunch of stuff without really saying anything. And so I guess we'll just play a little clip of Seth talking.
How are you? So, you know, you're going into the third season. Do you have any expectations? You set the goal previously to win a bowl game. And I know you've mentioned that that's still your goal. Do you have...
That's Aldo asking a question there.
Are there more expectations for your team?
Well, there's always going to be more expectations every year when you come together. You know, I like where we're at. You know, I think it was the third time in 40 years that we won 9 games. But at the same time, our players and coaches know that we felt like we left some things out on the table. You know, I like to start. You know, the culture over the last 2 years, getting 2 straight bowl games, which has been great things, but we still haven't won them.
Did you hear him? That was a talking point there.
Yeah. Bowl so games. That's what I wanted to talk about is that I was, the reason my question was so long and drawn out is I was trying to say his talking points before mm-hmm. he said them.
Mm-hmm.
In order to make him say something that wasn't on his talking points, but apparently it wasn't enough, and so he just went straight to his talking points.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things. One, we're not the greatest interviewers. We try, you know, hard. And in this context here, I don't know anybody that got a great question in, you know, because we're listening to other people ask questions. They're not. You can see that some of the writers are like, you did a good job, huh? And they're like, oh, yeah, we did a great job. You're going to try hard this year? Yeah, we're going to try real hard. Like, I mean, so not the greatest.
Talk a little bit about football.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll just say that we were not the best questioners. We did try that. Our approach was kind of like, you know, here's a softball. Cool, here's another softball. Okay, let's kind of get into it. And then, again, we're getting pulled away or other people are jumping in and sticking their mics in and go like, hey, tell me a little bit about XYZ. And you're just like, God. Dude, I was warming up. All right, so let's go back to Seth.
That's ultimately going to be our team goal this year, to make sure we win our...
Just a pause. He says ultimately. Like, he's pronounces that as Ultima. All right.
So really, just help us.
Last 2 years, we still haven't accomplished that mission. That's something we definitely need to make sure.
Are there any new players stepping up in a leadership role now that you've got a whole bunch of seniors graduating?
Well, I think there's been a number of guys this summer, and this is kind of the time. We win our bowl game. As it's been the last 2 years, we still haven't accomplished that mission. That's something we definitely need to be sure.
Are there any new players stepping up in a leadership role now that you've got a whole bunch of seniors graduating?
Well, I think there's been a number of guys this summer, and this is kind of the time through spring and summer, you know, as they get together, leaders start to step up and start doing some, you know, getting other guys around them
more
you know, performing at a high level. And there's some guys like Mason Fine. I think he's definitely had his best spring and summer camp. You know, he's up there doing extra all the time. He's around the players, he's getting other guys to follow him. And you know, work even more and doing extra things needed that we have to do in order to accomplish.
This is where I wanted him to talking about guys like, I don't know, DeAndre Torrey or Nick Smith or something specific, mm-hmm. where he then goes back to his talking points.
I know already, you know, it's the third year as a head coach. I can see it in you. Like, you look more like you fit the profile now. You're like more comfortable being a head coach. Did you feel, I guess I can bring up old wounds here. You guys lost to FAU twice, right? Pretty handily. Did you feel like you grew as a head coach through those losses?
I think you grow through any win and or loss.
Oh, my God.
Every game, you're going to either get better or get worse. And I feel like as a staff, as our players, and as myself, you know, we get more comfortable every game.
That was a pointed question.
I felt like we had given him enough. I mean, he just rambled there for a little bit. I mean, he didn't ramble, but he was like, yeah, you know, everybody's working hard. He's working hard. He's, you know, getting people to follow him. You know, that was all stuff we've heard him say in various outlets. So I was like, okay, he did that. Now he felt like he doesn't feel like we're controlling it. Like, you got to say everything you say. Cool. Hey, Did you feel like you learned something losing to FAU? That was kind of what I was trying to get at. Hey, I mean, honestly, if you get your ass handed to you twice, right, as a coaching staff, that got to bother you, right? You know, just the same way. Like,
I scored 110 to 47 or whatever it was.
What did you learn? That's kind of what I was going to get at. And I think in a different setting, like maybe we had 10 minutes with him, 20 minutes with him. We could have got that. But I think this one we only had like five, maybe minutes.
You know, there's different learning experiences throughout each and every game. So, you know, I definitely feel more comfortable this year three, which I should. And I think our guys, we feel more comfortable as a family, as a unit, as a coaching staff. You know, not losing any coaches this past year has been key. Now you're not having to coach the coaches and the players. Everybody's on the same page. Everybody understands what, you know, what we're all held accountable for. And it's been a much easier transition through this spring and summer camp. So we're a lot further ahead than we were this past year, but we still have a lot.
Yeah.
So I think he brings up some good points here that I think are useful, is that he's no longer teaching, whether it be the players or the coaches. Now everything's just like running like it should be. So I guess that if you're looking for tidbits and nuggets, that's pretty important information.
Yeah. That's one thing that is a thing there. We did lose, like, was it most of the staff? A good portion of the staff after the first season. And so in a lot of ways it was kind of redoing it again, even though they try to keep a lot of things in place. We got to remember, it's like not only the third year for Seth Luttrell, it's third year for Mason Fine, but it's the third season for the rest of the staff, offensive staff, you know, Graham Harrell. So yeah, that was a good point. I will also point out here that I wanted to get a haircut before I got up there, and I didn't. It's not like my hair was crazy or anything, but it was just. And it kind of did this weird twirl thing because it was like I was like sweating, and I saw him like look up and kind of glance at my hair, kind of go like, "What's going on there?" And I was like, "Oh shit, nah!" And I was kind of distracted.
Day was shot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, it didn't look awful, but I would say like 15% self conscious about that because I was like, "Damn it, I wanted to get a haircut Monday, I didn't get it." And by the time I got up there, I was like, you know, here I am at this thing. And I found myself like on the ESPN broadcast a couple times, just like in the background. I was like, it would be the day, you know, that you want to get a haircut and you didn't do it. And then that's when, you know, it's saved on the worldwide leader, right? All right, here's more of the guy you want
to
hear.
Work on. There's a lot of good football to be played in this conference.
So, as you say, same coaches, a lot of same players, your third-year starter at quarterback. I think the average fan, maybe even like the interested fan that cares about like the strategy, they saw some of the evolution. A lot of the first year was like real simple air raid offense. You can see a little bit more of the ones that everybody's used to seeing, you know, every week in some of the, I don't say bigger schools, but, you know, more established schools. What is the trend? What do we see year three? You know, like, I guess this is your chance to promote.
The older you get, the more mature you get, not only as a coaching staff and the longer you're together, but also as your players. You know, I think the more mature they get, the more you can put on them, the more you can evolve offense, defense, and special teams.
Is that more motions? Is that more?
You know, it's just
always trying to get it more specific, and he's not cooperating.
Yeah, I mean, so in that one, I knew he said some of this on a podcast on what is it called? I can't think of it now. One of the big podcasts. They did their offensive series, and he kind of didn't go into detail on that one. Right? He hit these same points here, and so these are good points that he's going to make. And if you're wondering, like, why did I cut him off there? It was because I heard that already. Like, you can find that from Seth Luttrell out on the internet already. I was like, okay, so what exactly, buddy? What exactly are we going to see? I know I saw more bunches, more clustered formations last year early in the season. If you remember against SMU, we came out, we had some clustered things. That was different. That was new from, you know, versus year one. And so I wanted to see what that was. I know that Mike Leach said that he kind of added more motions like later on as their offense evolved. So I'm just kind of wondering, like, what do you think?
Better every year. You're always evaluating who you are in all three phases of your game and where your strengths are, where your weaknesses are, and just understanding that you're just trying to add new wrinkles, you know, throughout spring ball, throughout the summer, and you know, come into fall camp and rep what you've got, You know, at the same time, you want to rep it over and over and over, and that way when it's time to get to season, it's easy, it's simple. It's very easy to go out there and play fast because you understand what our system is.
We've heard him say this a bunch of times, and I mean, this is like literally in every air raid coach's cliche handbook. Yeah, so it's not bad stuff. It's just that we've heard him say this stuff. So, yes, I'm a failure to journalist here, guys.
You were able to keep your coaching staff together, and you were able to get a guy like Luke Wallerius. How has that helped your recruiting momentum this summer? And now that it's a dead period, what's your focus for the fall in terms of recruiting?
Yeah, Luke's done an unbelievable job, and we knew he would. I got an opportunity to know Luke when he was on the Kentucky staff. Mark Stoops is a guy that I've worked with before and have a lot of respect for. But him coming in, he's done a great job of just the organization, keeping me organized on everything that I'm doing in recruiting. And then also, you got to really credit our coaches. They've gone out, and over the past 2 years, that's been what we've been trying to do is establish right, building relationships, making sure that we continue to hit the same schools over and over and over, and getting those guys to come out and watch our practices or to come talk football with us, and they understand who we are, not only as coaches, but as men, as mentors, them understanding that we're going to take great care of their student-athletes when they come here, and they're going to have a great experience. So I think over the years, just building those relationships, year three has gotten much better, and I like the direction it's going.
So that was Seth Luttrell, everybody. Round of applause. Seth Luttrell, thanks for coming on the show. There was a lot of ambient noise in there, and again, that's the setting. It's just an open room, and you know, people are conducting interviews 2 feet from you, or maybe even 1 foot from you, kind of depending on the situation. So a lot of these interviews are kind of like that, where we were not intentionally trying to get bad audio, but sometimes it's all you can get. This was actually from a video that we're going to post later. That last part about recruiting, that you talked about building relationships and that kind of thing. That was another issue when he first got on that a lot of people pointed to and said this is going to be a concern for us going forward. Is he the kind of guy that can get the kind of recruits that we need to get? And, you know, he said the right things. Build relationships, do local. We get all the people here. I mean, right here. There's lots of talent. It's the best place in the nation. Everybody said that. And I think we can pull up quotes from Dan McCarney, from Daryl Dickey, from Todd Dodge. Everybody has said that. And it's all true. Even other people outside the program have said that, right? You know,
They got to do great. It's amazing over there. They got so much talent. Why can't North Texas be a powerhouse?
Well, it's hard to get people from the town to stay in the town. But separate discussion. It was always going to be one of those things in recruiting that you had to let it bear out, let it play out before you could criticize it. You know, like we can't see it, first day. His strategy for building relationships, and I made this point earlier on a separate topic, but very similar, offline, not in this podcast, that when you build relationships and you do these kinds of things, it's a 5 to 10 year kind of deal sometimes. And it's not going to, you know, bear fruit immediately. You're not going to say, well, I visited that high school today, and so tomorrow I expect all their 3-star athletes to join our school. You know, it's not going to happen. You talk to them over a few months, you build up the trust, that you win some seasons, you have all these conversations, and, you know, then you start to get the trust from the athletes. Maybe not even that athlete on the roster right now, but the next one coming up. You know, that's how that happens.
And especially that trust takes a while to build up when in the past 5 years before that, there had nobody been there to build that trust. And, you know, there had been whispers of, you know, well, this coach never goes to our school to visit us, so why should we care about North Texas? And it turns out that there was a lot of truth to those statements.
Yeah, and again, so if your staff is not building those relationships, you're gonna mess things up later on. The Athletic had a great story about how Charlie Wise really messed up Kansas recruiting because he took a bunch of JUCO guys in his 2 or 3 years there, right? And you know, like half of those dudes didn't stay even their 2 years. It just gutted their entire roster. And so they were in a similar situation to what we were in when Seth started here, and that we were significantly short on numbers, and they're having to do a whole lot of things to kind of make that up. And, you know, if you read that story, it kind of sounds familiar. to what happened here. And you see the value, you see how one guy, one staff can ruin the next staff, right? Or at least severely hamper them. So recruiting here is always going to take time. It's good to see, you know, right now we're number one, right? It's really early days, but right now we're number one in recruiting, and you know, you don't see the same people that were criticizing Seth Luttrell, criticizing him too much anymore. And, you know, again, because now it looks like things are going well.
And I will say that I was one of those critics.
Yeah, you're awful, and that's why we hate you. That's why we're going to fire you.
I am the worst. I mean, his first season, I was like, okay, you get a pass. It's 1 month till signing day. There's only one person verbally committed. You know, get what you can get within the next 30 days, and we'll see what happens with that class. Second class comes in, and there's a little bit more, you know, a scrutiny with that class, but he's bringing in Mason Fine, which at that point, there were still question marks, but, you know, he's playing some freshmen like Jalen Darden. You see Jalen Guyton come on, Nick Smith, and then Mason Fine really turn it on, and you're like, well, they're really good at evaluating. So that's good, you know, bringing in these two stars, possibly three star athletes. And so now the next step is, can they win these head to head battles? And this past off season, we've seen that. And, you know, that's exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, not to, I guess, use up our whole quiver of arrows, talking points as we get towards the season. But one thing that we've been talking about is that we need to build up the defense. This last season, recruiting season, they, you know, got some JUCO guys in there, and a lot of that was because they, in trying to build up the offense, they didn't have enough for the defense, or they missed, really this is what the case, they missed a lot on defense. And, you know, that happens. That's fine. It seems like they hit almost every, I can't think of a guy that they've taken on offense that has played significantly that has been just a miss. Maybe Alec Morris. But you know, all of that has been okay.
Shots fired.
I mean, he got benched for a freshman quarterback, right? So, I mean,
in three quarters. Yeah.
Is that how he figured his debut was going to go? I doubt it. So there's that issue there. Defense, but we're going to have to see how that works out. Again, over time, they've taken guys, they've been trying to develop dudes. As these high school guys, because those are your program builders, right? The high school guys that you stick there, because by their senior year, they're leading the other guys. And as Seth Luttrell was saying, they're doing some of that work for you. And as we get to Mason Fine here, you'll see that they start to repeat and they sound like their coach. Right? So the coach didn't have to say this anymore. The players are saying it. They sound just like them. And yeah, Mason Fine sounds just like Seth Luttrell over there.
Yeah, we should just replay the Luttrell tape
and that'll be it. Okay, here's Mason Fine. Again, this is a video that we're going to post on here. So I don't know. This is why it sounds the way it does. Sorry.
All right. I guess first impressions of the season. How are you ready for your third season as a starter?
I mean, expectations are, you know, high, but you know, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. You know, we're working hard in the summer, and we're going to be looking into fall camp, and you know, we're expecting just to focus on each week, focus on the task at hand, and focus on that team, not try to look too far ahead, and just and each week be 1-0. It's really the mindset we have right now.
You can tell that you're getting like Coach.
Yeah.
All right, so like third year as a starter, how is the game slowed down for you already? Is it slower?
Yeah, I think in year one it was going really fast. Such a transition from like 3A Oklahoma ball to college, it was just a big shock, really. The game was a lot faster. As you could tell, the you know, how on the field you could see. But that sophomore year, it slowed down. I think it just came with repetitions and being in the offense, being more comfortable with it, and it slowed down. So hopefully year three, you know, I'm continuing to work hard and keep doing what I'm doing, and hopefully it'll slow down a little bit more and be even more successful out there on the field.
I like how they all transition to that and say, so therefore, you know, we just want to maintain and get better and do it. And then it's talk. That's good writing focus. There. Yeah. If you guys are writing an essay, that's it. You get it and repeat your points again. I think wherever the PR people are doing a good job prepping them. Okay, you're just really talking to the PR people this whole time.
So you mentioned, you know, they're adding more wrinkles, right, because you can handle it now.
Right.
What kind of wrinkle? I guess without giving away the game plan. Like, is that more motions? Is that more audibles at the line? What is that? What does that mean?
You know, Coach Harrell gives me the freedom to do, you know, if I see something I want to audible to, he gives me that freedom. If there's something I want to exploit, you know, I have the option to just throw up, you know, just a route, hot route, or do that. But just open up the playbook larger and just utilizing
What'd you say?
I thought that was an important tidbit of information, that he has the freedom. He's trusted enough to be able to call an audible at the line, depending on, I mean, I know he's not changing the entire play, but he's changing a route when he can read the defense. So that tells me he can identify a key on the defense and then make a change at the line.
Yeah, and if you're familiar with the air raid offense, we've written a little bit about this. That is something that Mike Leach, at least, famously gave all his quarterbacks. That, you know, he would say, you know, there needs to be a good play every time. Like, if I give you a bad play, you need to get out of that play, right? That's part of your deal. I can't see it. I'm not looking at the defense. You're standing right there. You can see better than anybody out there. That's what he gave Graham Harrell. I don't know. Obviously, Graham Harrell's not really giving him that same freedom. But, you know, this is only his third year, entering his third year. So we'll see, you know, by the end of the season, 12 games in, what he's doing out there. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, see the field better. I mean, he is 5'10". He's looking taller. I will say, when he first came in, you know, I would go to the line to hand slap the guys as they would go into the stadium. I was like, man, this guy's short. And this year, he's looking taller. He's growing.
I mean,
he's a grown boy.
He does look bigger. I mean, you know, there was a video of him lifting with 315 or something like that.
So the next question.
He is a shorter
guy. You asked him about play calling and scheme and whatnot, and I didn't feel like he answered it like we wanted him to.
Mm-hmm.
So I pretty much asked the same thing you did.
Are you trying to give an excuse here?
our players, our skilled players, and just put them in the best situation to be successful. Get the ball in their hands. You know, have them do all the work. Just get my job is to get the ball to their hands and have them do all the hard work.
Yeah, I mean, see, all those are talking points there. You know, we just want to get the ball in the playmaker's hands, let them go play. We want to explore the defense, get better every day. I mean, we could write it out. You know, it's like we could have AI write it out, some predictive text, and it would give the same answer. But I just want to say, yeah, so he does have freedom to change stuff at the line, and that's good. That's what you want your quarterbacks to have. And you would expect that your junior quarterback coming off a Player of the Year award has this kind of freedom. Again, I don't know what the differences are. We're not in a quarterback room. I don't know what the differences are between, you know, Mike Leach 2007 or 2008 Graham Harrell-led offense versus North Texas 2018-led offense. You know, Mason Fine-led offense. But there's that similarity there. A lot of freedom from the quarterback. That's what you expect from air raid squad. All right, here's more Mason Fine.
So along those lines, you know, in your first year, you were starting out with competence like mesh and smash. Year two, I think we saw some like inverted beer, some more complicated things. What other concepts are they introducing?
I think it's just the coaches, you know, working what suits us best. You know, you all have the main concepts for the air raid offense, but also maybe some, you know, RPOs. Maybe we'll do more running back by committee. Just, you know, put our talented football, our talented players in position to be successful. Get them in open field and just have them, you know, beat one-on-one matchups. That's really what we're trying to do.
What is the toughest stadium that you played in so far? The
toughest stadium I played.
All right, so before, you're like kind of wondering where the change of direction questions come from. One, they were getting ready to steal them from us, and this was like a running, this is our fun question to everybody. Like, hey, what's the funnest stadium you played in? And it was easy. I sometimes use this as an opener just to kind of get them a lot more chill. And it was, I think they gave more fun answers to this. I think the UTEP guys are the best ones. They were just like talking. I haven't even gone through that audio again.
Yeah.
I have to like clean that up, because otherwise it's just like we're us talking there. It's not quite podcast worthy. Here's his answer.
Yeah. Probably going back to my freshman year, down playing the Florida Gators down there in Gainesville. Especially that was my first road game, and then I think I saw something where a year ago I was playing in front of just like 2,000 people, and then that game was 90,000. So it was just loud, it was real hard, and just that had to be one of my toughest places.
Wasn't it like your first snap? It was just in it, like on the one or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know if they punted it to us or kicked it off to us, but we were down on the one and first play took a sack for safety. So can only go up from there, I guess. So yeah.
You got to start backwards again. All right, so two things. I know we only got a limited amount of time. So for me, I think that first year, was it like 3rd and 10? Against Rice, you're down 17-0, and then I think you threw it up to O'Kieran Rutherford. He jumped, like I guess two guys fell down, that's what I saw.
Right, yeah.
And then he caught it. And that was kind of a miracle play, right? A little bit of luck, and I always say you'd rather be lucky than good. And then I guess in the UTSA one, there was the bomb there. That was, it's a little fortunate there. I mean, how do you go about like mixing in, I guess, some of that luck there with like in the thing? You know, you kind of got lucky, a little fortunate.
This was like the most awkward asked question here, and some of this was because I didn't think I'd have a chance to answer ask him this, and then we kind of didn't get the build up. And so really what I wanted to do was ask him that first one, have him talk about it, ask him the next one, have him talk about it, and then tie them together. But they were like, you're getting ready to steal them, so I was like, let me see if I can ask these together. And if it
I think you're
sense.
Also being delicate,
yeah,
because I mean you're kind of asking him, are you really that good, or do you think you're just lucky?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I guess let me go back and kind of. So, some of it was that, and some of this was me trying to ask, "Hey, how do you balance? How do you lead your team? Like, how do you balance the luck part of the stuff there, right? And then, like, how are you keeping the morale up?" And I wanted to get him to talk a little bit about like how some of the stuff Graham Harrell tells him. I know there was like a clip of it on one of those the behind the green things. Graham Harrell was like, "We got to expect to score," and you can hear him give a part of that answer here. So I was hoping to elicit a more like deep answer here about his leadership on the team, his philosophy going into every play, and a little bit about those points as turning points in the seasons and their respective seasons. Again, this was poorly timed and awful questions, but that's on me. You know, I'm just trying to get better every day. You know, just every time I go out there and just ask better questions, just a better question every day. That's what it is.
There, how do you keep everybody together and just like, hey, we're gonna get through this or something like that?
I think it's just always believing and you know, being positive and not losing your enthusiasm, because if you get down, things just continue to go downhill. So yeah. If something bad happens, hey, keep your head up, keep pushing, be positive to your teammates, and that's the biggest thing. And just hard work. Just be the most prepared team. And like I said, hard work works. And so eventually you're going to catch a break every now and then. But if you're doing the little things right, for some reason you always seem to have more opportunities if you're just doing the little things right. So that's what I do. Just focus on the little things and just be positive.
So was your mindset in a similar place in that 3rd and 10 against Rice, and then I guess the 50-yard pass? Was it 50?
Yeah, it's just having faith. Having faith in your coaches that they're going to put you in a good situation. Having faith in your teammates making that play. Just being positive and knowing, having that faith that you're gonna go down there and score, because you have the players around you to do it. And as a quarterback, you just always can't seem doubtful. You can't seem like you're hesitating. You just have to go and attack, and that's how you go about it.
So did you really not see the catch on the?
And then this is a pivot to the UTSA stuff. What did you think about his answer there?
I mean, it was a little bit more like a combination of coach speak and a little bit of heartfelt, like, yeah, I mean, when I'm playing in the game and things work out well, it feels good. But when things don't go right, like he had been in a situation when things weren't going right and it was going downhill in his head. But I guess the coaches were able to uplift him a little bit. And that's cool insight of a quarterback's mind, and he's playing in the game. But the rest of it, it's like you just got to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
You got to practice yeah. longer than everybody else.
Yeah, I did think that you kind of tied my terrible questions to his answer, which is also why Macy finds pretty great. You said, you're going to get fortunate sometimes, and but that comes from the hard work. It's just kind of reinforcing his belief in the hard work and the rest of the coach speak there. But yeah, I agree, and that's kind of what I took from it. All right, here's when I was asking about the play, the score against UTSA.
This game-winning touchdown against UTSA, you didn't really see him catch it, is that right?
No, I didn't see him, because that guy came unblocked to the blitz. What I did saw is that, they were bringing eight.
What I did saw.
Guys dropping three. And what I should have done is just picked on the one-on-one matchup to the left side, but instead I didn't. I kept the play. And so I knew I had to hit my hot route. Rico was coming across. You know, we audibled that early in the game because he wasn't my hot route. And then they ran that same exact thing. He's like, hey, we need to make Rico, the receiver, that hot route next time we run that play. And so we talked to him about it, and then they blitzed, and I knew I had to get to Rico, and I just saw him coming around, but also that defensive tackle drop. I was like, all right, and I have a guy in my face, so I just got to throw it over there somewhere and just have faith that, you know, my receiver will be there and make a play, and he did. So yeah.
I think that was play of the season, at least for a lot of people.
I mean, it's a T-shirt now.
So. Yeah, I mean, it's a T-shirt.
Whenever you're doing drills, you know, practicing, what is the big thing that Coach Harrell hammers on you on?
Timing, especially in this offense, it's all about timing. If you do a three step and you hitch when you should have just done a 1-2-3 ball, you know you're gonna throw an interception. It's gonna be a pick six. So that's the biggest thing is throwing timing. Don't hesitate. So it's footwork, and so we work a lot on the footwork, but it's also just anticipating and timing. Because if you're off your timing, you know things aren't gonna be bad. They're gonna go downhill in this offense.
I like how I like his like it's timing. And so then it's footwork, and then also you know it's just take, but yeah, that was a good question, and I see how they, you kind of lead to these things once they're already talking, they're already spitting all this stuff out,
right? And then they start talking, and you know the point of that question was to try to figure out, you know, what are things he needs to work on, or what are things that Graham Harrell sees that he needs to work on. So I'm asking, what is Graham Harrell doing to make you better?
Yeah,
and like, give a good answer.
Yeah, yeah, and for us, I think it's good to get an idea of what they've been working on. And we kind of asked a few of the guys here because, you know, they're like, you know, just trying to get better, work on things I need to work on. And so, like, well, what are some things that you need to work on? And they're like, oh, just getting better. Some just kind of retreated. Others gave good answers like, well, yeah, it's actually, you know, my tagline sometimes. A few of them gave some interesting answers about, like, how they're improving. And we asked follow-up questions like, all right, is that a coach saying, hey, you got to get better here? Is that you? How are you getting better? Are you putting extra time in? That kind of thing. So these weren't always answered well by everybody, but this was a good answer by Mason Fine. It kind of gives you an idea of what he's working on this season.
Yeah, and I wanted to add to what he said about the UTSA pass. Mm-hmm.
Were you on the field? You're going to give us insight?
Yeah, I was right there. I was right behind him. It kind of gives you a sense of his instincts, you know, because a lot of the times, like he's saying, it's a three-step drop, and then you make a calculated read. It's math in his head, you know. Mm-hmm. The safety moves this way, so I'm going to throw to the corner instead of to the hitch. And this was just instinct. He has that feel for the game, that intangible that people talk about, and so that's something you want your quarterback to have.
Yes, and I think when it works out as it did, it's great. But I think there is another world, a sliding doors world where that's intercepted. And
it doesn't always work out. Just ask Tony Romo. He's got great highlight reels, and then he's got great low light reels.
Yeah, and I mean, I think you have to adjust for that, right? You have to adjust your risk calculation. If you have a quarterback that's always going to try to make a play, then you know you always have a shot. But then you also know that he could also throw the game away sometimes. And so, you know, it's high risk, high reward, that kind of thing. And so you want to adjust your game plan for that scenario there. Obviously, when we're driving to win the game, you want a quarterback that's going to try to fit it in a window that maybe seems impossible. You don't want a dink and dunk passer because he's going to take the safe option the whole time. And you know what? You're gonna, the drive's gonna end on the 40, your own 40, you know, with like 30 seconds left. That's what's gonna happen because they're not gonna say, you know what, I believe in you, Mike Lawrence. Here it is, chuck it up, make a play, right?
And time and time again, this kind of goes to your question about luck, is that you see Mason Fine just, you know, scramble around and then identify an open receiver and just chuck it like 52 yards from release to catch point to guys like Michael Lawrence or what's his face?
Rico.
Turner Smiley.
Yeah. I mean, Rico. Those kinds of plays happen and they're great. But for every one of those, you get a couple and you're hoping you get fewer. But you also need the ones that he throws an interception. You also need the ones where you do the interception, right? The turnovers against UTSA in San Antonio, his freshman season, you need that so you can have him throw those passes that actually are successful last season. The interception he threw against Rice and a couple of the other interceptions he threw against the rest of the teams. You need those so that way by his third and fourth year, he's not making those interceptions. You know what I mean? He sees what actually fails. He's like, man, I try to fit that ball in there. I can't be doing that.
Right. And also, yeah, he can identify and not get sucked into to or get baited into an interception.
Yeah. I mean, and so, you know, like as you said right here, he's diagnosing that play. He got away with one. He hit Rico. Rico scores. But he's like, I should have picked on a one-on-one matchup over there, right? So fourth year, senior, late in the you know, like next season, 12th game of the year, he makes that call without even thinking, right? He's like, all right, adjust, you know, run a whatever route, do a go or, you know, fade or maybe a slant or, you know, a stop, whatever their thing is. And, you know, that's why senior quarterbacks are amazing. They're so valuable. And freshman quarterbacks aren't, right? They just get by on their talent. Like, I got my, look at this big old arm I got. Let me just fire it in there. Like, well, if you would have just ran the play, you would have saw that the backside, post is wide open because of this coverage we had here. And it's great that you tried to fit it in there, but, you know, we needed a miracle. We could have just had an easy 17-yard gain on the other side. So that's that. And I think you're going to ask a question on this last one. There's like 10 seconds left because they pull him away.
I think it's the last question. Okay. I'm trying to stay away. Along those same lines, what do you feel like you got to get better at? I guess to right. Like repeat as Conference USA Offensive Player of the Year, maybe?
I don't think it's one specific thing I got to improve on. I got to improve on all aspects of my game. Just put this team in the best situation to win, and that's improving my footwork. The biggest thing for our team to be successful is I got to limit the turnovers. I think I had too many turnovers last year, so if we can take care of the football and put our defense in better situations to be successful, I think we'll be fine.
So, again, that's why I like Mason Fine, because he did a great job answering that question. He could have just repeated what he said. Well, you know, coach said timing, I said timing, done. But he added a little something. He said everything. Yeah, okay. Sometimes I think I'm too perfect. That's my flaw. Okay. but yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm trying to work on everything, but also the turnovers, right? That's where it came out. That's the additional thing there. And if you're going to get on me, you're like, well, why did you ask the same question as Aldo? I didn't. Aldo said, what is one thing Graham Harrell asked you? And I asked, well, what is one thing that you think you can improve?
It's like an interview question. Like,
yeah.
Name five of your flaws.
So that's Mason, and, you know, he's great. And, you know, he gave a great answer. Everybody loved the kid. He was surrounded and hounded, and everybody had questions for him. And I think he gave some other answers that were interesting. And he talked about how much he loved Seth Luttrell because he gave him his only shot. He told a story about how he got recruited and how he had the chip on his shoulder. Some great quotes from him that other people got and have posted and written. Anything else stand out from interviewing those two?
No, I mean, I, like you said, I feel like they've grown the past few years. They're a lot more comfortable. Expectations are high for them from the fan base and from the conference. So they're going to be, especially considering that you know, he's one of the, you know, most productive G5 quarterbacks coming in. A lot of people are going to be watching what he's doing. And so that's awesome. But also, I hope he succeeds.
Yeah, we're coming up on the kind of like the end. We're almost been doing this for an hour. I don't want to make you guys have like a 17-hour podcast right here. I'm not R. Kelly. I don't post overlong, audio. So we'll probably do like a part two for the rest of the conference later on. Do you want to do EJ right now, or do you want to just kind of save that for next time? Also, what do you think?
Let's save that for next time. Yeah, get a little bit more time.
All right, cool. So let's just kind of talk about the rest, some of the other impressions of the thing. Coaches, Butch Davis is a great guy to talk to. Also, he tries to invade your space.
Yeah. I felt myself leaning, like if you ever seen a picture of President LBJ talking to senators, leaning over them.
Yeah,
that's what he does.
And I mean, he hit a lot of talking points. some of these guys, we're not really, I mean, FIU, how much do you, the North Texas fan, care about FIU? I mean, maybe we play them later. But yeah, we don't follow them as closely. So some of those were just kind of like, tell me about, you know, whatever. I think
they're an interesting case, though. Yeah. They did win eight games last year. Before that, they had been named like preseason sleepers or preseason team upcoming to turn the tables or whatever, all those buzzwords.
Yeah.
But they never did. And then finally, you get a coach like Butch Davis that he's a good coach. You know, criticize him all you want for some of the things he's been involved with and might be well-deserved. But he's still a quality coach. And so he was able to take these players, kind of like Lane Kiffin did, and a lot of these other Conference USA coaches did, and chug out eight wins. And he did lose players, but he's got a shot. I think people are overlooking FIU again.
Yeah, that's one thing. We'll get into this next time we do part two. But those are some of the questions you asked him there. I agree. I've always thought FIU was good, and they've had a couple seasons, as you mentioned, where they've been like right there. They kind of surprise, and you're like, well, it's no surprise because they're all that talent there in Miami. And there's same thing they say about North Texas. Butch Davis, and he hit on a lot of these things in his answer. He laid the groundwork for Miami with Jimmy Johnson. He laid the groundwork at Miami for himself, for Larry Coker to win the titles. He laid some of the groundwork for the Cleveland Browns, and they ended up having some good seasons after he left. And where else did he coach? I'm forgetting one. That was in North Carolina, right? Was it North Carolina?
North Carolina was the stop before.
Yeah, he's done good coaching. He knows how to build a program, and a lot of these teams, a lot of it's just getting them to get out of their own way. Right, and in a lot of ways that Dan McCarney did for North Texas, that North Texas team that turned into a bowl-winning team. Dan McCarney's not as good a coach as Butch Davis is, I don't think. But they're kind of a similar vein in that, I think Butch Davis focuses on defensive line. He's a defensive line kind of guy. Dan McCarney was a defensive line coach. They know what's good, and they know, in a very specific scenario, Dan McCarney knew what a good program looked like, and he could make your program be more like that, right?
To an extent, that's what he did.
Yeah.
And he was a better coach than Todd Dodge.
Yeah.
And so you increased the quality of staff you had before, and you had the 2013 season. And then you take another step, you bring in a Seth Luttrell, you know, and you improve the quality coach there.
Where Butch Davis is better coach than Dan McCarney is he gets better players in there. And, you know, maybe just a better overall program builder. Butch Davis is a good coach. And if there were no Lane Kiffin, Butch Davis would be the talk of the East, I think.
I think that's for sure.
Yeah. Who else we talked? We talked to Mike Sanford. I think you had a crush on the dude.
he is the coach bro of Conference USA.
Yeah, he's a little bit like Cliff Kingsbury out there. I kind of threw out someone like, hey, you had a good offense, and you everybody got sacked all the time. Like, what the hell? And he was like, he knew the sack number. He's like, yeah, 48 sack. We're just kind of hard. He kind of threw some excuses out there. I don't believe in Western Kentucky this year either. Maybe I'm saying I don't believe in Mike Sanford, but I don't. I don't believe in Western Kentucky. I do believe in Florida Atlantic, but Mike Sanford, it's funny. Mike Sanford was like, yeah, well, I knew they were going to be good because they basically hired Baylor. And then they basically hired Mississippi State's defense. And all that's true. And he's like, but they're going to have some challenges too. You know, changing those coaches, that's going to be an issue. So we'll see. Everybody's looking at FAU. I think Lane Kiffin's a good coach. And I think that he knew to get Baylor and Mississippi State's defense in there is evidence of his ability to hire. I'm a little skeptical of Charlie Weiss Jr. out there. But Lane Kiffin is a good offensive coordinator. Sorry, go ahead.
When we were – Lane Kiffin is the offensive coordinator for FAU.
Yeah.
When we were doing some of those interviews, one of the reporters was asking some questions, and he asked them, "Is Charlie Weiss going to be calling plays?" And it was a very dodgy answer.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact audio, but he was like, "Well, we'll see when we get there."
Yeah, he was like, "Well, when are you going to know?" And he's like, "Well, there's no date, and then even if then, we could always change it, right?"
And could be in the middle of the season.
Yeah, and I asked him, and I think this answers the question. I asked him what makes a good play caller, and he's like, well, you know, like a feel for the game, like knowing when to make adjustments. I think he was expecting me to ask a follow-up question, but I was like, I got everything I need from that. If you're saying it's adjustments, feel for the game at the moment in time, then if Charlie Wise Jr. is making bad adjustments, then you're going to say, well, he's not a great play caller just yet, right? And you're going to remove him out. That's how we'll know whether or not he thinks he's a good play caller.
And a guy like Lane Kiffin, he carries a lot of notoriety.
Yeah.
Because of all the stops he's been in. But he's a really nice guy. I really liked him interacting with him and just watching him talk. And even though he's like really soft-spoken, like Ricky Bobby at his first win, I feel like he's definitely a good play caller, a guy that designs good offenses. He brings good staff together. And so, I mean, his success is deserved. So I won't knock him off for that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I thought he was going to turn around FAU. I didn't think he was going to turn them around so quickly. And outside of conference play, I'm rooting for FAU. Like, I'm rooting for them to beat Oklahoma. That'll be great. That'll be great shine for the rest of the conference. And we didn't get a chance to talk to Coach Stockstill, or there was one other coach we missed. Was it Doc
Marshall?
Doc Holliday. Yeah, he didn't seem like he wanted to talk to anybody either. Even at the reception, he had arms crossed. I don't know. Whatever, it's fine. I don't really believe in Marshall this season either. I don't believe in, everybody has Marshall number two. I don't do it. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. They struggled with a junior quarterback last season, a longtime offensive coordinator, and their defense carried them basically, and they lost.
Right, and I think their defense carried them that far with a struggling quarterback. So imagine having a good quarterback, and I think they're bringing in a pretty solid quarterback. I'm blanking on his name, but they're bringing in a solid quarterback. So I think they're going to get over that hump. The linebackers coach is getting the promotion, so the defense is going to be the same for the most part. The offense coordinator is what's changing, and I think that defense is going to carry them. Last year, they had the chance to Trent Dilfer their way into a Conference USA championship, and they almost did.
We'll see. I'm skeptical. There's too many moving parts there. Southern Miss, Jay Hobson. I'm scared of Southern Miss because I think Hobson can get some dudes in there. But he always, if they can find a quarterback, I'm scared of Southern Miss. And it was funny. He had the same attitude as UTSA's running back did when we asked him, like, "Hey, Ito Smith, how do you replace it?" He was like, "Yeah, well, I think we're better this time. We're deeper." Like, all right, buddy. And then so speaking of UTSA. They're going to be bad this season, but they might be so bad, so overlooked that they might be good. I can see that happening.
They're going to be underdogs, but they're going to outperform.
I think people are expecting them to be very bad, and they might be okay. You know what I mean? Like, and they might surprise. Like, hey, look, it's scrappy UTSA out here. But look, they lost their presumptive starting quarterback. They have a quarterback battle between four dudes, right? They don't really believe in any of them. Some of them have the resumes. There's like a Bryce whatever kid, and they're just like, nope. They really had a competition between five, but they were expecting Frank, I forget his name, that kid to take
Frank
it.
Harris?
Yes, Harris. They were expecting him to take it, you know, kind of like, here's a competition, but really like, you're going to win this, right? Just to kind of sharpen him up. And, you know, he broke his leg or whatever. He tore something. I forget what exactly his injury is. But he's going to be out for the season. So,
yeah, it's Excel. I liked him. You know, it might be another situation that the defense pulls the offense or helps the offense play better by putting him on the field.
What was your DC's name? Golding? Yeah, he left Alabama. I'm kind of concerned about that one. If I'm a UTSA watcher, I'm like, I don't know how that defense is going to adjust. Not only did Marcus Davenport do a lot for them, like you watch if there was no Marcus Davenport, North Texas just eviscerates UTSA in that game because he was the only one getting into it. And they were so focused on stopping him that that's how other guys were getting to Mason Fine or even challenging him. But you remember, like, it was, like, in the second quarter, Marcus Davenport starts hitting him, and then, you know, that's how UTSA kind of got back into the game. Yeah. And the third quarter, same kind of deal, is Davenport. They were trying to adjust to him. They were moving him all over the line, and then, you know, North Texas was kind of scrambling there. Their line is good. They've got some good players. They got talented players, but I just...
Yeah, the guy who's there was Kevin Strong Jr. Yes. I think he's a defensive end.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's a good player. And I asked him about, my question was going to be, I know that Marcus Davenport isn't the identity of the team. Like, there is the team.
But all that dude heard was Davenport. And he just, like, clearly he's like, oh, like the staffer rolled his eyes.
Yeah. I was like, hold on. Let me finish.
Yeah. When we do part two, we'll play some of that. And that's going to be a video. You might see the video before we get to the audio. So yeah, I mean, I don't really believe in UTSA. I do believe in Rice. Blomgren is going to give him an identity, and I always like guys that have a clear identity, that know what they want to be. And, you know, number two is that they have talent on the roster. They had talent last season, and these kids have always been well-coached. The previous coach was a good coach. I mean, he was, like, the winningest Rice coach in like, ever, I think. Or, like, he was, like, a few percentage points short, but he's taken him to the most bowl games. He coached there for 10 years. David Bailiff.
Conference championship.
Yeah, he was a good coach. And so I think they needed a different voice, and I think they were also a little bit unlucky. Those are the two things kind of combined in there. Because coaching at Rice is a grind. It's a very unique situation. And I think Bailiff kind of – he lost a couple just a little bit of luck. He had some bad things go their way, and they just needed a different voice in there.
Yeah, and I agree that there. I mean, where he struggled, he built a decent defense. It was his offense that kind of sputtered towards the end. Mm-hmm. But you know, Blomgren was talking about how he wanted to put in a power offense with West Coast passing, and I tried not to ask about Christian McCaffrey or Bryce Love, so he brought it up himself. So.
Yeah, he did. I think people heard of them. I think they're going to want it. They didn't have a problem. yeah, he was one of those guys that says something and smiles after he says it, like, you know.
Yeah.
But he's cool. Guy I really like was Dana Dimmel. It's Dimmel, not Dimmel there, Mr. Aldo.
Are you sure? Staffer was probably wrong.
Yeah. So he's a nice guy. He seems super fun and whatever. And he tells a great story, but that's going to be a hard job. He's like, yeah, we just want to show him positivity. And I've been part of teams. I've rebuilt Kansas State. I was one of the terrible players at Kansas State. And then, you know, like, I saw how it was done there. And then we went back later. We kind of rebuilt. I've done it everywhere. But then you look at his coaching record. He didn't do too great at Houston. He didn't do too great at Wyoming. Not that amazing. So then you're like, this is a very difficult situation. UTEP doesn't have the talent like Houston did. So what are you going to do there, buddy? Sean Coogler did some good things at UTEP, lest we forget, before it bottomed out. That's beyond just the coaching job that was done by Coogler, because I thought he did some okay things. It's like the support, the administration, all of that. I mean, their basketball coach left too, right? There was same. It's not just the football team's bad. What do we got to do to fix it? There's like a whole athletics department thing going on there.
Yeah, a whole exodus of just bad management.
Louisiana Tech's going to be good. We mentioned this before, and we're about to shut this down. But I think Louisiana Tech is the team to beat. And there was a little twinkle in Skip Holtz's eye as he told the story.
Like he knows.
Yeah, I'm going to be good, buddy. Nobody's looking at us for the first time. But he mentioned it, too. He's like, we're bringing back a quarterback. First time we've done that in a while. You know, we've been getting these JUCO guys in here, and they've been killing it. But we believe in Jamar Smith. And, I mean, I have reason to believe him. I thought he was going to be good last season. I thought he was one of the better quarterbacks in the league, if you kind of watch him. He had some bad – he had a couple bad breaks because his receivers were injured. But I like him.
Jamar Smith, he was quietly a pretty productive receiver. I mean, he even with all his bad breaks and slowdowns here and there.
Did you say receiver?
Huh?
You mean quarterback?
Right, missing his receiver. I don't know what I said.
Yeah.
anyway, he put up over 3,000 passing yards.
Yeah.
So he can make some plays, and he was a sophomore.
Yeah, if in the same way that North Texas could be a losing team, but for a handful of plays in a very few specific games, and I think Seth Luttrell mentioned this, and so did EJ Ajayi. But for a handful of plays, this could be a totally different team we're talking about. Same thing with Louisiana Tech. If they catch that break against us, then they win, right? And, you know, when you look at it, they've won every bowl game in the Dallas-Fort Worth area except for the Cotton Bowl, like the, you know, Jerry Jones Stadium Cotton Bowl. That's Hard Dallas Bowl, Fort Worth Bowl, the Armed Forces Bowl, the other one up there in Frisco, and
yeah, the Frisco Bowl, whatever yeah, that one's called.
And then I'm missing one, I think. That's the three of the four, right? Three of the four. That's all of them.
So they won four in a row, though, right?
Yeah, they won four in a row. So they're real good. They're real good. You got to look out for Louisiana Tech. I'm scared of them. Then you have us, North Texas. Good offense. Question marks on defense. I'm a little scared of UAB this time. Bill Clark was a little upset with people saying, well, at least with us. I think he was ready to go. He didn't like that we talked to him when he's ready to go. He was like, all right, bye-bye. And we're like, hey, can we get some time? He's like, he had a smile, but like a frustrated smile. He's like, yeah, 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 sure. Let's do it. You know, we brought up to him, hey, you guys were underdogs last season. Maybe they didn't take you seriously. You know, now what's up? And, you know, he was like, well, maybe that's an insult. But they all had the underdog thing. I'm a little scared of them. They have the kind of offense and the defense to make it tough on North Texas. They got, you know, they nearly beat us at home. Now we're going to Birmingham. So we'll see about that.
Yeah, they're a good running team, and Erdley is a good play-action passer in the short range. He can be pretty deadly. As long as we can force him to pass downfield, I think it's going to be a tough game.
Yeah, they have something to prove, so they're not just like, we did it. Look at us, which maybe FAU has that. Like, hey, we did it. We're the best. We got a Heisman Trophy candidate, you know, whatever. UAB is like, hey, we lost that home game, right? We lost, the bowl game, and we slipped up against Charlotte, and we slipped up against North Texas, right? If we win those things, hey, maybe we're in a conference championship game. Southern Miss, Louisiana Tech, UAB all could say reasonably, but for a couple of plays, we could have been there. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be a tough league.
That's for sure.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks for listening to this episode. We're going to – all the audio is going to go up in various forms. It's going to be on Conference USA Report. Also, a lot of the other stuff about the other teams we care about, North Texas, are going to be on MeanGreenNation.com. You can tweet us. You can email us. All that stuff is on the site. You can find the links and all that stuff there. Shout out to what is it, RB Scout? The RB Scout is there an article
in front of the RB Scout?
Yeah, good times in Frisco. It was fun. I enjoyed it. We hung out. You and I hung out with other writers and stuff. That was fun. And then we hung out like after at a couple places. Me and then I met up with a friend. Good times. Just good times all around. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that Nirvana place we went to. They had the video games at the bar.
I couldn't help but think, I'm paying for a drink, and then I'm playing PlayStation 4 up here. Like, I literally could do this for, like, 15% of the cost at home. I have this game at home. I could play it at home, you know? That thought did cross my mind, but it was fun to just go and, you know, like, it's a cool place. You can play older games and stuff. Aldo did beat me at FIFA 17 on penalty kicks, but that was cheating.
Just tapped it right in.
Yeah, and then he ran around the place, did a flip. No, he didn't.
Took my shirt off.
They're like, sir, you're going to have to stop. So, yeah, good times. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. Gum and Green.
Gum and Green.